Everyone to the Region 5 Planning and Policy Council meeting. Thank you all for being flexible and moving it up last minute. I really appreciate it. Looks like we have 13 participants on the call so far. My name is Kirby Fye. If you've joined via computer, I'm listed as Amy Holland, but it's Kirby Fye with the department. Just a few things I want to go over. Per Governor Lee's Executive Order 60, this meeting is being recorded. And it'll be available on the department website within the next day or two. Also, if you're not speaking, can you please be sure that you're muting your phone or your computer, just because it gives a lot of feedback while during the meeting. So please go ahead and mute. Also, if you've joined via phone, actually, no matter what, if you have any questions or comments, can you please state and introduce your name? When you're speaking is just helpful when it comes to the minutes. I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance. I'll start with the individuals who have joined via computer because I can see their name, and then I'll switch over to the individuals who have called in. Like I said, my name is Kirby Fye. I'm with the department. I see Adrian Doakes, Amber Hampton, Avis Easley, Barbara Ann Nelson, Debbie Hillen, Jen Talbert, Kimberly, what's your last name, Kimberly? What's that?
Ladd, L-A-D-D.
I knew that. I was just kidding.
Sorry.
Kimberly. Cooper or Cal Bryant, Kurt Hipple, LaWanda Mays, Sherry Allen, and I see an individual who called in with an 865 number. Can you state your name, please?
Yeah, this is Daniel Ellis with Disability Rights. Brian Keller couldn't be here today, and so I'm just here on his behalf.
Hi, Daniel. All right, Sherry and Amber, or Sherry and Amber, Debbie and Amber and Sherry, I'll hand it over to you all.
Again, welcome to the Region 5 meeting, and I want to echo what Kirby said. You guys were very gracious and helping us to remove this time-allotted slot. The part of the reason for that, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, was that one of the big executive order ends, I think, the end of this month, and they weren't sure what the governor was going to do. So not only did we move these the Region 5 meetings, I think there were three of us that needed to change our dates. But they're also moving the statewide planning council meeting, which will be October the 28th from 10 to 12. So that meeting likewise has been moved because wasn't for sure what was going to happen with executive orders after the end of this month. So again, many thanks to all of you. Sherry sent out the minutes to you. I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes. I'm off of mute. Amber, can I get you to make a motion to accept the minutes?
Yeah, I'll move to accept them.
I need a second. Kimberly, are you seconding? I can see your mouth moving, but I can't hear.
Yes, sorry, I second.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion or anything with regard to the minutes before we vote? All in favor signify by saying aye or raising your hand or saying something. Better yet, anybody who opposes, please acknowledge yourself with your opposition. Otherwise, I'll assume the minutes have passed. Okay. We have today with us Kimberly Ladd, who is the director of the Maury County Coalition. And she's going to talk with us about the upcoming ACES Toolkit for the Community Coalition. So, Kimberly, first of all, thank you very much. And we're going to turn it over to you.
Hey, everybody. So I don't want to disappoint everybody's expectations on a full-on presentation. So I first want to apologize that the toolkit itself is not quite ready yet. But I just wanted to still give an update, and Sherry thought that would still be a good idea. And I think it's always a good idea to, especially in groups like this where we can give additional feedback, because like I mentioned before, we totally expect this document to be ongoing and a living, breathing thing, so we can continue to add resources as we go. I spoke with Sarah Murphy from Prevention Coalition for Success. She's the director over there. She is amazing, and she has been wonderful to help put some finishing touches on the toolkit. But it was a collaborative effort on her behalf. Also, Stephanie Strutner was gracious enough and to lead us in our planning session. And again, that was a part of a larger collaborative effort involving the Prevention Alliance of Tennessee. For anybody who was involved with Prevention Alliance of Tennessee, they are what we call a coalition of coalitions. And that was previously led by Leah Festa, but she has moved on. And she's no longer with us. But there was just a lot of people that came to the table and in open forum talked about what practical things could go in this toolkit. One of the really amazing things about coalitions that I love is that it is a collaborative approach. What I love about prevention is it starts with a conversation. So as many of you, probably most of you know, coalitions are centered around 12 collaborative partnerships that have common goals. So what we find now, ACES has given us a great deal of information. We now know so much, and thanks to the Building Strong Brains effort of Tennessee and with Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth, many of us have been trained in and know the science on building strong brain architecture. So with that knowledge and understanding, how do we now implement those strategies into our prevention goals in our communities? So with that said, we have an opportunity to take a look at what's working in other communities. So we considered existing resources. What will be unique about our particular toolkit and this, and for us in Tennessee, is this toolkit will be specifically for community coalitions. Please don't quote me on how many coalitions we have. Tony Jackson might not like that. I don't know the exact answer. So let's see, 46, I think. Does anybody know the difference, different on that? But we don't have a coalition in every county, but every county is represented because this is a collaborative work. So with that said, this toolkit, I expect and hope for it to inspire communities that do want to come together around and learn more about the public health model and how we can build resilience in our youth and post-traumatic growth with families that have experienced trauma. So I know that was a mouthful. I'm just going to give a basic kind of flow of what we expect the toolkit to look like. And then again, a finished and final product we expect to be available after January. So as most of you probably know, and I don't want to expect that everybody knows this, and to be real with you, I'm still learning it myself, and a lot of y'all know that. So thank you for that grace. But coalitions, like I said, represent 12 community sectors, from youth, parents, law enforcement, schools, businesses, media, youth serving organizations, religious and fraternal organizations, civic and volunteer groups, healthcare professionals, state and local and tribal agencies, or other youth serving organizations. And as many of you are aware of the data that we now have, the more ACEs a person has, the more that increases that load, making more people more vulnerable to have outcomes like we see with coalition work. We seek to address substance use disorder, for example. So it gives a real good overview of the ACEs data. And while ACEs, you know, of obviously our work together and impose risk factors there when they're combined with social determinants of health, that further complicates health and prosperity and outcomes. So with that said, community coalitions have a great opportunity to positively impact their communities, and that's really exciting. So we just give some evidence-based information. We go into a small piece on the collective impact model and the theory behind systems change, and that, of course, being a key part of coalition and community success, an overview of again, building strong brains and paper tigers. If a lot of you are likely familiar with paper tigers and building resilience and a background for that with access to a toolkit from MTSU. Then we give an overview of the strategic prevention framework, and that involves five steps of a community assessment where we gather prevention needs based on data, building capacity and readiness to act, planning, going through that planning process of addressing prevention needs and how to do it well. Implementation, and then finally evaluation to make sure that we are indeed being effective in our community. And that is guided always, the strategic prevention framework is always guided by two cross-cutting principles that should be integrated into each of those steps and all of our activities, and that's cultural competency. You know, making sure that we are involving our community. One thing that I love about coalition work, it's a phrase that I was taught early, is nothing about us without us. And I feel that, and I like to send that message with everything that we do, making sure that we're working effectively with everyone in our community. And then growing and building sustainability as we go so that we can thrive outside of any grant funds that we have. Graciously, we do have in many cases to help get us started, and we're certainly thankful for that. Definitely. Okay, so with that said, let me go on and talk about risk factors, highlighting risk factors and increasing protective factors. And that's basically an overview of what coalition work looks like. So we want it to be comprehensive, but yet digestible, and take a look at highlighting what those factors look like. And we'll offer a toolkit for that. We'll review root causes and local conditions, and providing interventions and evidence-based links to direct resources. Coalitions use, what I didn't go over, is coalitions use seven key strategies that work together to guide prevention, and that's one, building skills, or excuse me, I should say, providing information, and that's growing awareness in the community, building skills, and providing so access to support. And those first three are individually focused, and the last four are environmentally, total community focused, changing consequences, looking at the physical design and makeup of our community, and modifying policy, increasing access, and addressing barriers. And I do want to say, as far as environmental prevention, this this Saturday across our state. There's the DEA drug take back from 10 to 2. You can visit takeback.dea.gov and find a take back location. I'm going to be with RX Compound Pharmacy in Columbia doing that thing. So that's a really good way for our community to get unused medications and expired medications out of reach. From vulnerable populations who just need to, and it's not good for our waterways either. But again, this toolkit will provide access per each of those strategies, a direct link to an evidence-based strategy. So we hope for it to be as out of the box as possible to get folks up and moving toward integrating ACEs into their public health work and community work. And then, of course, strategies for each sector too. And this is what I think, this is again what empowers me about 12 sectors at the table, is it takes a village. And that rings true for everything that we do. I mean, just it, and it tickles me because I know, you know, kids don't grow in a container, they grow in a forest. And when we think about the strategies, you know, and I'm thinking as a parent myself, parenting is hard. And so as we link together and we all work together, I love times that I get to see Debbie. I love times that I get to, you know, link arms with Alan, because I know that building that partnership and that capacity is how we build and grow support as we focus upstream. But yeah, it takes a village. I always remember too that that it, you know, if it takes, I'm trying to remember so I don't say it wrong. If it takes a community how should I say that? I'll come back to that. I'm not getting that one right. If it takes, how does somebody know how that goes? If it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a community to support one. So yeah, and I didn't say that. Chris Field said that at Fort Campbell. I heard him say that once. I was like, oh, that is so good. So I always reiterate that to our 12 sector partners. I came to the table originally as a parent. So I knew that I couldn't do this myself. We needed to link arms with people that were already working in the community, like our healthcare. We all share goals, and we can link partnership and share language and build competencies moving forward. And there's a lot of space for empowering our parents and our schools. And one of the ways that we can do this, obviously, is supporting parents, but trauma informing our schools and people that interact with our families and youth. So the toolkit will obviously include that. Increasing access to healthy food, providing mental health first aid training, access to QPR training. So again, really comprehensive. And as I'm saying these things, again, I'm not mentioning them all, but if you just have a, hey, by the way, you can always email me at Kimberly@murrayprevention.org or chat it here in this space, or we can talk about it too if I don't talk too long. Providing safe space and connection in our community, growing awareness for mindfulness and increasing connections, all the good things there. I think I'm getting kind of toward the end of the toolkit. I am. Those are specific references, and we'll have all of the references, and it will be all good thanks to people that are really working hard on it. So Yeah, does anybody have any questions?
I have one question, Kimberly, and that is this toolkit, how is it going to be distributed to, say, the South Central counties? Because I know that's probably where a lot of y'all's focus is on those 13 counties down there. And I know yours is specifically Murray, but how or is this going to be rolled out to the other counties?
Yes. So my response to that would be through the South. One way I would think is through the South Central Commission on Children and Youth. Did I say that right?
Okay.
And also through distributing through the channels, through the Drug Endangered Children's program and work, and we'll be partnering there too. And if anybody has any suggestions, obviously those distribution channels are a key consideration, obviously, to existing coalitions. And making it available to communities that may not have a coalition, but may want to start a coalition.
Now, is the coalitions, are they the ones just down in the southern part, or will that be available to any coalition statewide?
Any coalition statewide.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this effort involved a lot of coalitions that, you know, had that in mind to make it widely available. And not just in Tennessee, hopefully any coalition that wants to access it and use it can. I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited for it.
Okay. I have one other question, because we use the ACEs as a screening tool for any client entering our services. And I know we had to go through a lot of training. And even to be able to say that we did ACEs assessments, we had to contact them to do that. What has been the connection with the actual, for lack of a better word, and I can't put my words together today, the ACEs gurus?
Mm-hmm.
What has been the connection, coordination between the actual people who publish the ACEs stuff and what you guys are doing, and how are they feeling about this quote toolkit?
Excited. I mean, everybody is in different places, because some people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're talking about ACEs one more time. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you know, we have, you know, people that have been trained that are like, I don't remember what that is. I'm sorry, I don't. So there is a wide gap of now how we implement boots on the ground strategies, because we have grown past that stage of, okay, now we know about ACEs, and it's permeated, I feel, to the level to which it can. Now we need to move forward, and that's really the heartbeat of the trauma-informed strategies, Debbie, and making sure that we build awareness and capacity there. And those are careful conversations. You know, we don't want to re-traumatize families. We want to empower families toward post-traumatic growth and building that wellness capacity. So how we do that does to take collaborative action, you know, careful conversation and dialogue, and a focus on brain development. And I think that's why, you know, it really is important to keep our conversation centered around the growing and developing brain for youth until age 25. But then that we always have an opportunity to experience resilience, and that's bound in relationship. So whether we're talking about recovery or resilience, the answer is that relationship and, you know, us doing it together. You know, I always like to point out the self-made person is a myth, you know. We need access to support, services, and oftentimes just getting these resources into the hands or knowing what resources are out there is so much a part of, you know, the goodness that can come from folks coming together on these issues. So I think this toolkit will encourage that action.
Oh, we lost you.
Am I back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is getting the experts to the table and toolkits and frameworks for action. So I hope that answered. Did that answer your question or not really?
Yeah, you did. And I have one more and then I'll hush and let somebody else ask. Is this tool, is or will this toolkit, how that was really good, wasn't it? Be available. I know what your focus is on the youth, but what will this toolkit have value that we might could use while in treatment services for the adults who have a high ACEs score?
Yes, and my response to that would be, and that's a large part of how we, I'm trying to think of what that would fall under and sound smart about it, but I'm failing miserably. Providing support. That's the strategy that we would use to make sure that families have access to those recovery supports. So absolutely, because again, if we look at that ecosystem of prevention, that's providing access to treatment and services. Does that?
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Any others questions?
Yeah, I have a question. So you mentioned QPR and mental health first aid.
Oh, that's Amber. Okay,
it's Amber. Sure. Amber Hampton. You mentioned QPR and mental health first aid being part of like the trainings that would be recommended as part of this toolkit. Do you guys have, because I know, for example, mental health first aid, there's a few groups. I mean, we're one of those groups that have a grant right now to do it for first responders specifically. But I know that there typically is a cost associated with that. Is that something that you guys are just going to recommend, that these are trainings that you guys look into, or are you also going to provide contact information, or is there some sort of funding available for youth mental health first aid?
Okay, I'm writing down your question because as I'm thinking about it, the crew at MTSU is working on providing the direct links to that. So I don't know that I know the answer directly to your question. But I see the spirit of where you're going with that.
Yeah, and I know MTSU also has a SAMHSA grant right now to provide mental health first aid for folks that are on campus. They've kind of released some of those restrictions right now because of COVID. But overall, after that grant funding runs out, once we get this distributed, there are going to be a lot of people that want access to that. And because there is a cost associated with that training, either it would need to be covered in grants or the agency would have to pay for that.
So what would you think would be the best case scenario there, considering that this is across Tennessee?
I mean, I think it would be great if it could be grant funded, but I don't know if that would be, I mean, in my brain, I feel like that would be partnering with some type of organization that would be willing to do that. Or able to do that, or already has funding secured to be able to do that. And I don't know about the other trainings. I know TSPN does QPR and they can do that because they have that cost covered. But if they weren't to do it through that, then there's also a cost associated with that. So I was just wondering on behalf of the organizations what that might look like.
Right. I'm going to roll that question up if that's okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question.
To follow up with what you just said, Amber, I know we have LaWanda on here and we have Cooper on here. They was talking about funding. Y'all think you can partner to help with this? You guys are always good at partnering with the community on doing these things. I was just wondering, And not to put you on the spot, but you know me, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Debbie, I have the Opiate Conference of Shelby County on my other laptop here, so I missed what you said. I want to meet. I'm sponsoring the other conference, and I have an exhibit booth. I have to keep my eye on it in case if they want to talk to me. But they're on mute. I'm listening to you. Tell me one more time.
Amber was talking about the fact that there's costs associated with the mental health first aid.
Yes.
And Kimberly knows that the toolkit that they've been looking at working at is recommending this. But then there came that idea of if there is a cost that they would have to do is trying to find partner agencies that would help fund that as this toolkit gets rolled out. And
I'd be happy to run this by Jeremy. Kimberly, why don't you email me and I'll run it by my executive director. And I love my executive director. He wants to help the community. If he has the funding, he would, but I'll ask him. So we can't, you know, he can only say no if he doesn't have the funding, but let's ask him.
Well, and I see she has dropped off for the minute, but you might also reach out to LaWanda Mays, who is with the Mayor Group.
I'll put my email address in here, Kimberly, for you. If I can find the checkbox.
Hey, Amber, will you put your email address in there also, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I was going to say is particularly in regards to youth, there is a youth-specific mental health first aid mm-hmm. for folks that are working with youth. That is a different training than just the generic mental health first aid training. And then they have specific modules for different populations because it is a set training. That might be something to think about as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? This is exciting. I'd be glad to see the toolkit.
Me too, Debbie. Thank you so much for championing the work.
Yeah, whatever we can do to help, let us know. Any other comments for Kimberly before we move on?